Hey guys, very special episode this week. Something that is near and dear to my heart, Star Wars customizable card game. You've probably heard me talk about it on the podcast. I brought it up a few times. This was a card game that I was obsessed with in the 90s, and recently I've been getting back into it. I got a chance to talk to Scott Lingrell. He is the lead advocate for the Players Committee. These are the guys, the volunteers, that have kept this game alive over the years. They continue to develop it. They continue to support it. They organize community events. This game is alive and well, and I'm so happy that it is. I've been having so much fun getting back into it, and I really want to share that with you, and I want to get more people involved. If you guys want to learn how to play this game, then I'm extending a personal invitation to whoever. You can contact me. I will teach you how to play this game. We'll play a few rounds. It's so much fun, and it's Star Wars. I love it, so I hope you guys enjoy. All right, we're all set. First of all, it's nice to meet you, Scott.
Nice to meet you.
Yeah, we've talked a little bit back and forth through Discord, and I'm excited to talk to someone about Star Wars customizable card game. I was really, really into this game, mid-90s to late 90s, kind of fell out of it for a while, and then just recently got back into it to discover that it's still happening. There's virtual cards, there's GEMP where you can play online, there's still people playing it.
It is pretty amazing. I like to think of it almost like an old girlfriend that everybody eventually comes back to her.
Yeah, exactly. Now, I didn't play too many other CCG games. I'm guessing you've played a lot, Magic, maybe some other ones.
No, actually, I don't play much. I learned Magic right in the beginning back in 96 or so. Played a couple games, went to a couple events, didn't really like it. And then my friends and I all played Star Wars. We like Star Wars, so I started playing this back then. Other than really Star Wars, I played Magic for maybe, you know, a month. I played Spellfire, which was, like, I think the second game to ever come out. That was from TSR, who now is owned by WotC. That game was a disaster. But I didn't play many games. It was pretty much just Star Wars.
Oh, okay. So were you, it's hard for me to remember if I was like a huge Star Wars fan and then I got into the customizable card game, or if it was kind of the other way around, but I think the two kind of fed into each other. You know, there's so much lore in the cards. It kind of fills you in on a little bit of the details of the story. And I think that really contributed to my love of the franchise as well.
Yeah, I saw the movies, enjoyed them, and didn't really know anything about it. But when I, as far as the cards, and then when my friend had like an Obi-Wan, and I was like, oh, this is really cool, and you kind of see the lore. Absolutely. I think that was one of the reasons why people liked the game, is because they really expanded on what was out there. So it definitely encouraged it, and I think I started to like Star Wars a lot more because of it.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I would play, you know, I would see these cards for the characters in the Mos Eisley Cantina, then I'd go back and watch the movie and be like, oh, there's the Tonika sisters, there's, you know, Labria, and you knew the names and then you knew the stories. It was great.
But yeah, it was really neat to be able to do that, absolutely. And even nowadays when I watch the show or any of the prequels or even the original trilogy, I'll look at that and I'll go, oh, wow, I completely forgot he was there. Or as I watched the new shows, I was like, I wonder what cards they would make out of this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And, I started playing, I think, around A New Hope, maybe right when Hoth was coming out. So pretty early. And so there was a lot of speculating, like, oh, you know, what's Boba Fett going to be when he comes out? You know, what's that card going to be like? And, you know, a lot of speculating. I think I stopped playing right before Endor, to give you an idea of my time frame. I think the last one was Special Edition. And, I was both a collector and a player, too. Me and my friends played a lot among each other, but I was also a big collector. And, you know, it's not, even though I love that this is online and you can still play it, I still kind of miss that collectability there. Do you ever find yourself, or do you still collect the cards, the physical cards?
Yeah, so I'm thankful enough to have all the cards just over the years. I do think that GEMP is trying to make it a little more collectible, while they have foils of certain things. If you win a game, you do get a foil of a certain card. But yeah, the collectability is important. And I think that's why, you know, proxies aren't really in the game, whereas Magic allows it. because they do want to continue to have a secondary market for the players that have their old cards. You know, maybe they want to buy and sell and trade them and have value to it. So I think that's important as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And just to explain for anyone that may not know GEMP, so that's the website where you can go and you can play this game. Now, I remember when I checked in maybe about 10 years ago, something called Holotable was pretty popular.
And yeah, Holotable's still out. Holotable was just the problem was it was like you had to move all the cards yourself and do everything.
Yeah.
So once they put GEMP dot, what's the web address? I think it's GEMP.StarWarsCCG.org.
Yeah.
And so when you go into GEMP, one of the nice things is it's rules-based. It's turn-based. It enforces the rules and the cards, just like Magic the Gathering Online or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
So it knows everything you're doing, which makes it so much easier as a player to play.
Mm-hmm. Or even
play
to
a lot,
learn.
To learn, too, absolutely.
Yeah. So, I mean, I started playing on GEMP, and it was very helpful for me because, again, having stopped where I did, there's a lot of cards, shields, virtual cards, you know, even some of the objectives that I'm just not familiar with, starting effects. Like there's a lot of mechanics of the game that I need to not only reacquaint myself with, but also learn. So that was really helpful for me. Now, do you ever miss, do you still play like in real life? Do you have people that you can play against?
Yeah, so I was lucky enough to go to Seattle last weekend, and in fact, one of the guys that made the top eight for the event, so it was the Endor Grand Prix. Mm-hmm. So the Endor Grand Prix, we had, I guess, 40 of us that went out there to play, and one of the guys that made day two the top eight for the next day that, you know, you play the first day, eight games, and it cuts to the top eight, and then from there, they kind of play a match play event to go on. But essentially, one of the guys actually has never played in real life. He learned completely on GEMP.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah, we still get together. We have local tournaments and things like that. It's just tough with life and family. So usually it's one of the major events that we have throughout the course of the year that I'll go to.
Yeah, and there's definitely a different feel to playing in real life. And even with GEMP, I mean, that can catch any mistakes that you might make. So I remember a lot of times being young, playing with my friends, it would be possible that I forgot to force drain somewhere or didn't correctly add up the power during a battle, or, you know, mistakes could be made and they could be not caught. And also, and I wanted to ask you about this too. So when you play in real life, like they give you with like a premier starter deck, that little rule book, and they kind of outline everything you need to know, but it leaves a lot of gaps. And so it's kind of open to the interpretation of the players at sometimes. But you guys now at the Players Committee, StarWarsCCG.org, you guys have an advanced rule book that's like 150 pages long that just has absolutely everything to it. So did you guys just go through and just make decisions wherever there was a gray area? Like, this is how it's going to go down?
Yeah, so there were kind of two parts, I think. First off, when Decipher put in the special edition rulebook, there was a huge rulebook at that time. But I think maybe I'd say about the advanced rulebook came about maybe about 10 years ago. And that was when we decided to just kind of look at every specific ruling, put it all in the one place. And then the second time we really did a modification on the second version is when GEMP was being coded. Because as GEMP was being coded, he would ask a rules question to our rules team, and our rules team would say, oh, this is how it's supposed to work. And then we'd realize actually certain cards worked differently than the way we thought, and in really doing a deep dive. So it was pretty cool to see that kind of come about. Like, one specific example I remember was Princess Leia Organa from Reflections 3. What she does is she basically says, cancel a force drain by placing the top card of your lost pile on top of your reserve deck. And mm-hmm. in GEMP, we actually realized you could cancel your own force drain to do that as well. And nobody really thought of it that way. No one played it that way until it was coded in GEMP.
Oh, wow. Yeah, yeah, just that outside of the box thinking. Crazy.
Yeah, so it's pretty neat how the technology helps us. But I think, you know, the rule book is massive, but at the same time, it's for those interactions that maybe aren't seen very often. Mm-hmm. One of the benefits of the Decipher game is that if it was in the game, it was in the movies, right? It was in the movie, they would, you know, you could do it. You could put wampas out. You could freeze somebody with carbon freezing. But the problem with that is, because of all those interactions, you do have a lot of rules. You know, creatures aren't even played anymore, thankfully, and that's, you know, way too many rules in the rule book. So it is what it is, but, you know, for the most part, the game is very deep. It's not a very boring, you know, it's a very in-depth game. And some ways that's good, in some ways it's a double-edged sword, because it is more difficult to learn how to play.
Yeah. I mean, you guys do have a beginner rule book. It kind of explains the flow of the force, the reserve deck, force pile, use pile, and that's pretty helpful. And the advanced rule book is a little intimidating, but that's more referential. You know, if you need to look something up, then you can refer to that. But
yeah, people normally don't use it unless it's exactly like you said. They're just looking to reference something or see what an errata is or what have you. We've also got like the online database now, which is nice, so that any card that's ever been errated, it's in there, right there in one spot, so you don't have to worry about 15 different reference materials, kind of like the Gatherer for Magic.
Yeah. Now, comparing it, because you've played Magic, I haven't really, comparing this to Magic, would you say it's easier than Magic? Because people have always told me how difficult Magic was to learn.
Yeah. Excuse me. You know, Magic, I thought, was easier just because the timings were the little tricky part for me. So I always had some issues with, you know, doing things during the certain phase, and if you forget, you kind of can't go back. I guess in the same way, the difference is that with Star Wars, there's a lot more on the table, and each card has their own interaction with those rules. So it is a little more complicated to learn Star Wars because of the cards, but I think the mechanics are simpler for Star Wars than Magic.
Yeah, I can see that. I mean, so many things can happen with the interrupt cards and all sorts of effects that you can play that it can really change the game. But the core mechanics of the game are actually, you know, pretty easy to pick up. You know, the battle system, the different phases.
Yeah, I think attrition is the biggest problem. So attrition of, you know, that's always been the biggest trick for newer players, and how much do you have to lose in a battle. For people that play a lot, it's kind of secondhand nature, but I know that's the biggest stepping stone in understanding the game a little bit better.
Yeah, definitely. Now, let's go over the timeline of this game a little bit, because I jumped out while Decipher was still making this game, but at what point did they lost the license to it? That's what happened, right?
Yeah, so I guess and we kind of have a lot of information be after the fact, but yeah, Decipher offered some money for the license. They decided they didn't want to renew Lucasfilm. At the time, Star Wars, you know, they didn't want to renew with us or with Decipher. So Decipher, what they did is they started the Players Committee. And the Players Committee, in looking back, it probably was meant to be a good faith organization, because they still had the Lord of the Rings game. They still had other games they were planning on supporting. And I think that was a smart move for them, because the players that wanted to play Star Wars still for free, because now all the cards were going to be virtual, they would still be involved in the conventions and events and go to the other Decipher games and then be able to buy the product for them. So essentially they put together this players committee. They gave all the old product that they still had to the organization. And our job was kind of stewards, so to speak, like Denethor, in the sense that we run the game, we come up with rulings, we come up with marketing ideas and making sure people know about the game and run the events. And that's pretty much it. That's what we've done for the last, you know, gosh, it's been 20 years.
Yeah. And when you say we, you're talking about the Players Committee, StarWarsCCG.org. Yeah. And this is a volunteer community that has kind of taken the reins after Decipher and continued to I guess, develop and proliferate the game.
Yes, exactly. So the volunteers, there's an advocate board, and then there's all the volunteers in every area you could possibly imagine, from playtesting to graphic design to, you know, tournament committee, things like that. But that's essentially, you know, the main decisions are made by the seven advocates, and then everybody else kind of involved in there below them.
Yeah, and thank God you guys did. I'm so glad this game's still around. I'm having a lot of fun playing it on GIMP, and I've been kind of cajoling all the people on my server to try and play it with me and teach them. But, you know, it's not quite the same as just picking up a game with someone who already knows how to play.
I agree. It is tough. And we actually have a teacher in Minnesota that teaches his middle school kids the game. That's part of their extracurricular activities.
Oh, wow, really?
Yeah, it's like a club they do, and he'll give them certain cards, certain things. He teaches them, and a lot of them play today, so it's really awesome.
That's great. Yeah, I'm glad this game lives on because, I mean, it's Star Wars. I love Star Wars, and I just think it's a great game. What I really like about it is, you know, you can kind of tell a story with the game that you're playing. And what I find myself trying to do sometimes is kind of trying to stick to like be canon or something by having like, a certain event play out from the movie, but you can just have all sorts of random things happening. And the game is like a story, which makes it fun to watch as well, I think. And I'm so glad GIMP gives you the ability to actually join a game just as an observer.
Oh, absolutely. While there are some iconic moments, that's usually the epic events, right? Like freezing somebody or blowing up the Death Star. It lets you kind of recreate smaller scenes, like the whole. There's a new deck out there called No Idea. They have no idea we're coming, and it kind of recreates the Rogue One where you have to get Stardust. So it's cool to see that and how it works. It's just a lot of fun. Absolutely.
Yeah. And that's one of the first things I started doing when I got back into this a couple weeks ago was I put together like an attack run deck and then a Battle of Hoth deck, although I think there is already one out there.
They have some things.
Yeah. Yeah. But it's great. You know, I had listened to another interview you had done on a podcast, and you kind of referenced something that I wanted to ask you about, about a specific card from Cloud City called Dodge. You had mentioned there was in the lore, there was some text that Lucasfilm was upset with the cipher over.
Yeah, so in doing some research, so there's a documentary that's being created. I don't know if you know this or not.
I did not.
Star Wars CCG. So Brandon Beatty is doing a documentary. So it's kind of a crowdfunded documentary. He's been doing it for about a year and a half, 2 years. We actually just saw a trailer at the Endor event, and I think he did a kind of a world premiere of the documentary trailer, and in that we talked about he did a lot of kind of meetings with the Decipher employees, with Warren Holland, who designed the game, and Jerry Darcy, who was one of the first designers, as well as the newer people like myself. And one of the things about Cloud City is that a lot of the lore, like in Dodge, I think it talks about pushing children down the steps and things like that, and so in the Cloud City one, they had a lot more leeway in doing the lore. Mm-hmm. And I think Cypher kind of got in trouble because from that set on, beyond that, there was no more of those funny references.
Yeah. And I remember that. Cloud City really, like the lore in Cloud City cards got very cheeky, I guess. You know, there was one with lightsabers where it was just like bzz, bzz, bzz.
Yeah.
A lot of that.
Things like, you know, Luke could give an arm and a hand, or a hand and he couldn't lend a hand or something like that. But
yeah.
I think, you know, there were some Easter eggs in the graphics that Decipher people would do. Like in one of the Dagobah asteroid pictures, it was a potato that you couldn't see. just like in the movie, the original movie, there was a potato apparently floating in The Empire Strikes Back somewhere. So they would do some graphic things like that that were hidden and intentional and then talk about them later. But some of the lore stuff was really, I guess they went too far and kind of where they had some freedom. They kind of got rid of that freedom on them, unfortunately.
Wow. Yeah. I can't remember if it started with Cloud City. It must have, but I do remember that one specifically just really going overboard with the lore.
It was definitely that set. You're right. You remember it perfectly.
Yeah. Yeah. But I did enjoy that set. That's when Sabacc or Sabacc, however you pronounce it, came out. And, that was a funny little side game within a game, I suppose. But my friends and I would actually play that game just with our our commons and uncommons and just like gambling.
That's not good, right? Lando made it so broken. But Sumbok is used every now and then. It actually got to be pretty, the top players in the world would be able to abuse it because they would make it so that late game you could never you'd have to keep extra cards in your reserve deck. And they actually have a defensive shield against Sabak now because of the fact that it got too abusive in some of the best players' hands.
So defensive shields, this is something new that was added to the game after I stopped playing. Was this just kind of like, it acts as like an effect that goes on the table and does something, but are these to kind of patch the exploitations in the game or kind of those obnoxious plays that people use all the time?
Yeah, so some games will ban cards, and Decipher didn't want to do that. So what would happen is you played in Special Edition. Remember Secret Plans? That, you got to use X-Force before you retrieve a Force.
Yeah.
So there were effect versions of basically all these kind of counter cards, as you could call it. And then once Special Edition... it had a lot of these counter cards, but then Reflections 3 is when they put the defensive shields in. And so the idea was, let's just make it so you don't have to draw into the cards because that can lead to negative playing experiences, they would call it. So the idea is they put the shields in play, and the shields would allow you at any time, 3 times a game, 4 times a game, depending on the version of the effect that you use, you could automatically just cancel a card or give you some help against another type of card. So that was the idea behind it, is some cards in the game are just really no fun, and they didn't want to ban the card, so they would make it so that the shield would get rid of it. That was
it. Okay. Just as a way of dealing with it. Yeah, I mean, I remember when I played, Alters and Senses were just very big. Alters, Senses, Controls, and... it was kind of different back then too. I was a kid. I didn't have much money. I would buy whatever packs I could. So, and same thing with my friends. So if you happen to have more alters than your friend, then chances are you were going to have the stronger deck. But now it's where you have access to anything with the virtual cards. It's a little different. That scarcity isn't there. I still remember opening Yoda in a Dagobah pack, and that was just like, oh my God, huge.
Yeah, that was my, my friend and I, our first box that we ever bought was Dagobah. And I was kind of an idiot and drafted IG-88 in the first pick of the draft. And then he got the second and third pick and got the Executor and Yoda.
Oh, wow.
So I got the short end of that. We thought IG-88 was going to break the game open. He didn't do a dang thing to it, but that's okay. Yeah. He was an awesome character.
Well, I was going to ask if you had, if IG-88 was your favorite character, or do you have any cards that you're, very sentimental about, any characters or cards?
So I think that, over the years, I really have done well with certain decks. So I've enjoyed the cards that go in those decks. I've always done well in Prophet. So I think I really like Master Luke. The Premier Vader has always been something awesome because he was one of the first Vaders that I was able to get. The one, he's obviously was an awesome card when he first came out. It's just not really. I think it's just certain cards have good memories because I did well with the decks. Not really. I like some of the alternate images. Those are cool to use. Like last weekend, I had some of the very rare foils that I now double sleeve my cards. So I basically, played some of the real expensive foils and AIs because I'm like, they're just getting dust in the binder, right? Might as well play them.
Yeah. So what are the hot decks right now that people are using?
So for Lightside, it's no idea. They had no idea I'm coming, which is essentially the deck that gets Stardust, right? So it's all about the Rebels going to get the Stardust and doing a lot of direct damage, a lot of battle manipulation. It's really good for that. I think for Dark, Routh Your Operations, which came out in special edition. You know, the deck, that what it does is it reduces your drains on other locations. I think that has been very popular. We have actually, one of the cool things that we do is now with Gemp is we do tournaments. So we just had what's called the Outrider Cup, which is still going on, which is the best of Europe against the best of the United States. And you can see what decks they're playing. So they're playing, you know, really the top decks, but they did kind of a Highlander version, which is they can only, like everybody on the team, it's 2 6-person teams, Europe versus US. So they're only playing, you can't duplicate the same deck on your team. So one of the cool things you can go in is you can see what decks they're playing and net deck those and play them yourself and try them out and see what people are, you know, playing with, which is really nice. But I like Routh Your Operations. The other deck I like is what's called Map, which is about Kylo Ren trying to get the map of Skywalker. So the idea is you, you know, you basically battle with Kylo and the troopers. So it's just a really cool, you know, battle deck essentially that also has the ability to drain big, and I like it a lot. It's a lot of fun.
Yeah, and a lot of these decks you're mentioning are available on GEMP, just pre-made. You can load them up right away.
Yeah, they're doing great with that stuff, which is amazing. This new technology now, right?
Yeah.
but all the events, like we just had the Grand Prix last week, right? So the decks are you know, going to be showing up. They're already, you know, getting there, and so everybody knows what the new meta is going to be. Everybody knows what this is going to be. It's a lot of fun.
Is there even like local metas or regional metas since everybody's playing online now?
I think it's more of a play style, right? So you talked about Sense, Alter, and Control. So back in when Decipher still had the license, when we were playing in this area in the Northeast, in the Philly, New Jersey, New York area, there was, you know, you had to play with 10, 15 total of those cards or else you couldn't compete against anyone else. So I think that nowadays there are some local varieties because of the idea that certain play areas like certain types of style decks, whether it's aggressive, big blue kind of thing, which is going to be the blue and gray, which is going to be mains and toys. So that does happen. But you're right, with the online stuff, it is less, it's a kind of a blend. You're not going to have that regional, feel anymore. But you do have play styles that'll show up in the events though. So, you know, if you go to a local event, they'll play a certain style deck, versus maybe Seattle or Texas or what have you.
Yeah. Now, do you guys stream this at all? Are you on Twitch when people are playing?
Yeah.
This?
So we do, we have a Twitch screen. It's just twitch.com or twitch.tv. I think it is right. Twitch.tv/SWCCGPC.
Okay. Great. All right. I'll have to follow that because I would love to see some people playing this game. I mean, it's great on GEMP, but, you know, you're just seeing the cards laid down in a virtual environment. But
absolutely. So, yeah, the events go on Twitch live streamed. And then once it comes off of there, we put it on our YouTube channel. Mm-hmm. So, for example, the other day I was curious. I did an event. I was streamed an event earlier in 2019. I wanted to kind of revisit that game and see how I did compared to how I did last weekend, because I played similar decks. And it was pretty neat to see how the decks changed and how I played them differently.
Mm-hmm. And while I'm thinking of it, you had mentioned a documentary that someone was working on and he had a trailer for it. Is that available online?
I will get the trailer to you. I apologize, I don't have it handy.
Hey, no problem. That sounds amazing. Like I would totally be into that and love to learn about the history behind it. You know, one thing I wanted to ask you too, when we were talking about rules earlier and I forgot to bring this up, but in the rule book, it said that at the end of the year turn, you're supposed to say the force is with you, to signify it's the end of your turn. And my friends and I took this very seriously. We always said it. And then we went to a local tournament at a card shop and nobody else was doing it. So we were like looking at each other, like, do we say it? Like, are we going to be that guy? does anybody say that at any of these tournaments? Are they too cool?
Excuse me. You know, one or two people have kind of that quirky personality where they will say it. But for the most part, not really. No.
Okay. Yeah.
I don't think so. Yeah. There was kind of a big joke is that you had to say it, but no, nobody really says it.
Yeah.
We have our own things that we do nowadays, right? You know, it's other, I guess, funny sayings and things like that that we'll say during the course of the game.
Okay. and just to give people an idea, these games usually last about an hour, right? That's about...
Yeah, it's a one-hour time limit. For some of the better events when you're in day two, let's call it, where it's you know, the top eight or top six, sometimes they'll go an hour 15, hour and a half per game. But for the most part, it's an hour. I guess the philosophy was if you can't win in an hour, you know, oh well.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, the first game that I played when I had come back, I had found someone in Genk who was kind of new like me. Well, not new, but they had played back in the day. They were coming back. So it was a good fit. We played a match and, you know, he had me on the ropes. I was about to lose, but he ran out of time because there's a timer in Genk. So I ended up winning that one by default. Just barely.
Oh, they ran out. Yeah, Genk is tricky. I've never taken more than a half hour to play on my part of the time. I'm a very fast player, but depending on the connection, it can take a little bit longer. That's unfortunate technology, right? We're kind of held on it.
Well, I think it was both of our first times actually using Genk too, so we had to. It took me a while to realize, oh, I have to acknowledge or I have to like do basically a ready check, you know, because it gives you the option. There's so many times where you can play a card with interrupts that you have to just, you know, the character or your opponent does one thing. It says, do you want to play any interrupts? You say no. And then, you know, it gives you that opportunity so many times. And I didn't realize till much later, like, oh, I actually have to click on that. And it gives me a limited amount of time.
But yeah, exactly. It gives you a few seconds and you can change those things. But I think that the Genk is amazing because it does highlight the cards and kind of trains you to, hey, look for this or look for that. Sometimes people can become too dependent on it. So when you get to a real game, you forget to do things because it doesn't highlight it for you.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I was shocked how easy it made it for you, almost too easy. But in your position as lead advocate for the players committee, so you're also involved. Are you guys still making new cards at this point? Does that ever happen?
Yeah. So physical cards, no. Right. So we don't have the part of our agreement. We can do the V slip overlays. So, and we have, you know, we have some, make them as professional looking as we can. You know, using the graphics, and if we need an image of a person, we'll use, you know, the best people that we can find out there. So we tried to emulate what Decipher did because they were always known for their great images and their great graphics, and we try to continue to do that.
Yeah. Now, how often do you guys make new cards, if you do make new virtual cards?
Like, absolutely, all the time. So, you know, usually three sets a year is really where we're at. So 2 to 3 sets. It depends. So that it keeps it fresh. And then obviously with Genk updating that, and like right now there's playtesting on Genk. If you're part of the playtesting team, you can go on there and do that. But it's definitely something that's out there.
Yeah. And these new sets are based off of just new Star Wars content that's coming out. Like, can we expect a Baby Yoda card or something?
Yeah, maybe. Right. Absolutely. Like, so we've got a character from the Solo movie that came out, you know, 2 sets ago. The last set had some stuff, right, revolving Rogue One, revolving Episode 7, or Episode 8, I should say. So, yeah, as the movies come out, or as the shows come out, we kind of adjust to that and tweak what we bring out. Put a card here, a card there. Absolutely.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah, and even stuff from the Clone Wars. I think I remember seeing like an Asajj Ventress or a Ahsoko Tano. Like, you guys do stuff from that.
Absolutely.
As well.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, I think some of my favorite cards right now are all the Rebels from the TV show Rebels. So they all... work while with an Imperial or two other Rebels, they do things together, and then all of the Rogue One ones all do something when they die. When they leave the table, they do this. When, you know, whether it's K2SO or Chirrut, or cool to see the theme. Each of them are really themed really well. I think those are some of my favorite cards.
Yeah. And you guys even pull from the expanded universe a little bit too. I think I saw like a Coran Horn card.
Yeah. So Coran Horn, he was actually the original one. So Coran Horn was the original one that the gentleman that wrote the books, I forget his name, during the Reflections 2 set that they put a Coran Horn out. We've put out a Coran Horn in ship. So his, I think he was Red 7. So we have a Coran Horn that in Red 7, kind of like the old Gold Leader and Gold 1 and Red Leader and Red 1. So we have a couple of those.
Oh, cool.
So I just spoke to, I sent you a link to the documentary.
Yeah, I got that.
And I just spoke to Brandon Beatty, and he said he'll get me a link in about 2 minutes. I'll be able to send that to you as well.
Great. Yeah, I'd love to watch that and share that as well. That's awesome.
It's he's got so much information, stories from designers and the CEO and the girl that played Mara Jade, with volunteers, with, you know, everybody and anybody. So it's it's pretty awesome that he's doing this.
Oh,
and
cool.
I'm excited to see where it goes. I know that he just finished filming in September, and now it's just a matter of editing it all down. So that's going to take some time.
Great, man. Well, I really appreciate you talking to me about this. I'm really glad we could share this with our audience, because I really want to promote this game. And, you know, when I first got into GEMP and I got into that table and started playing, somebody came in as an observer and just was like, hey, I heard you guys were new. If you got any questions, let me know. So it's a real friendly and helpful community there. And like, everybody's totally willing to teach you this game and to help you out. So I really want to encourage anybody who's maybe feeling a little lost or overwhelmed by all this. Like, it's so much fun, and I miss it, and I'm just glad it's still around.
Absolutely. You know, I'll tell you a quick story. Last week was the first event that this one gentleman that made the top eight made, you know, his first time playing in live. And what he did is he basically said this was one of the best weekends of his life.
Yeah, I believe it.
And he just had a great time, because not only are you getting together and you play the event, but then afterwards you can, you basically go out, you have board games that night, you all go out to dinner. I mean, it was a really great time. It was fantastic. And it's just a great time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it seems like a great community. And so if people want to get involved in this, I mean, what's the best way? They can go to gemp.starwarsccg.org, or they can just go to starwarsccg.org, and that really has links to everything, the rule books, videos, tutorials, whatever you need.
Right, yeah, anything you want to volunteer, it's all right there on that website. And obviously we're getting better and better, but we've got kind of a chart right in the beginning. You can see all the areas that you want learn about, and you can kind of find everything right there.
Yeah, and even you've got message boards on that site as well, and there's a player locator on there, so if you're looking for people in your area. And I even checked San Diego, which is where I live, and there's a handful of people in the area. So
absolutely.
So are you on social media at all? If people want to follow you, is there a place they can do that?
Absolutely. I think that you mean me personally.
Yeah, you or the players committee.
I rarely do. So the biggest thing is the @SWCCG. So that's like our Twitter handle. That is our Instagram. And we've got our own Facebook group called the, you know, Star Wars Players Committee. That one is out there as well. But yeah, that's pretty much the best way to find us is, you know, we've got a Discord channel. We've got a Slack channel. We've got all those things going on. If you actually go on our front page, you'll see the links to every single page.
Great. And you know what? I'm going to find all that, and I'm going to link it in the post to this too, just to make it really easy on people.
And I'll send you that documentary so you can check it out.
Excellent. All right, Scott, thank you so much for doing this.
Thank you very much. Have a good one, Robert. All right.
All right. Bye.
Take care. Bye-bye.